Welcome to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast, episode 21. Nevertheless, I'm addressed for the occasion. It's number 32, now here's the situation. It's the big boys you see that don't change the station. Take you back, cause we're leaving on a permanent vacation. Wow, I'm a disaster, a microphone master. Put on the tape, I'll rock you, get a blast. It's not about the money, cause I'm telling you what sorts of best. Sweating all the beaches and the biking shorts. I'm hot chocolate, and you see me running late.
Episode 21. I'm David.
I'm Eric.
And we are the Fanboys of Strike Back. Every week we read the comics that came out, and then we pick which one we thought was best. We write a short review of that on our site, fanboystrikeback.com. And then we come here to the podcast, and then we talk about that best book, the rest of the books that came out. We're going to be talking about a little movie news today, and we are definitely going to be talking about the quote-unquote season finale of Heroes, which was last night and was huge. But with that being said, this is a primary comic book show, so Eric, what did you pick for the best book this week?
This week I picked Green Lantern Corps 18, and I was really, really trying to get away from anything too obvious, but I was really kind of let down by most of my books this week. I wasn't feeling it, like everything just was less than I wanted it to be, and I had only started reading Green Lantern Corps, I started reading it at the beginning of the run, and thought, well, it was all right, but it's not holding my interest. And then I picked it up after you told me about the stuff I was missing for the war, and I wanted to get caught up on it. So I picked this book up, and I read it, and then I read the teaser for it online on DC's website, and it wasn't anything like the cover was different.
Right.
It was supposed to be the epilogue issue to the war, and yet this was part 10 of the war with it still going on. And so obviously someone fell behind, or the shipping fell behind, and this was a fill-in issue. So, surprisingly, I thought it was really good. I thought it stood out amongst what I'd read this week, and for several different reasons. I had already kind of talked about how I wasn't really a big fan of them replacing Kyle Rayner as Ion. If there's going to be an Ion, it should be Kyle or not at all. And I've already talked about how I thought the new guy was a little bit too headstrong and whatnot. But this issue, you know, I kind of sat down and got to know him a little bit. Like, they did flashbacks towards his youth and his planet and the intolerance that he faced on that planet and why he wanted to get away and what he wanted to become and, you know, kind of the events that shape him. And that's pretty typical stuff. But that was told in between clips of his fight with Superboy Prime or Superman Prime, whatever. And so this is part of the climax of the war. This is happening away from whatever Hal and Kyle and Guy and John are all doing. But this is a mano-a-mano fight, and very much kind of reminiscent to any kind of really good Superman fight or the Hal Jordan Mongol fight of Emerald Twilight. Sometimes it's just really, really fun to watch two powerhouses just go at it. And what it reminded me of was season one of Heroes when in the 5 years later episode when we got teased with a fight between a really powered up Peter in control of all his powers and a really powered up Siler who'd had 5 years to collect more power, and like anyone who watched that show was like, oh, this is going to be awesome, and all we got was the tease of it. This issue was a lot like that in the Green Lantern world. It's like this is like so like such a powerful guy on the side of right and such a powerful villain on the side of wrong, just straight up button heads, and it was just fun. Like, it was just a wham-bam roller coaster of an event, and there were several little touches that I really liked, because the new Ion also has a little bit of Kryptonian DNA in him, and so he's near Earth. He's in the proximity of Earth now, which I don't think he will be all the time, but he's kind of, he's gaining Superman-like powers, and they're kind of shutting on and off, and he's not really sure of how to control them. They're just kind of coming on. Mm-hmm. And there's parts in the fight where, like, they both, all of a sudden, he's not doing anything, but all of a sudden his heat vision starts shooting out, and then Superboy Prime, his heat vision starts shooting out, and they're just, like, burning the crap out of each other, and then they both crash into this lake, and the narration is just, like, we're burning each other until there's nothing left to burn, and you see the lake just instantly dry up, and it was just little touches like that I thought, like, wow, this is a pretty damn good fight, and it was pretty vicious, too, and there's something about the Gleason's art in this was really, really fantastic. It just, nothing ever sat still on the page. Like, there's just debris flying everywhere, there's blood on their faces, like, it was a pretty intense fight, and by the end of it, Ion's really wearing down, and like, it was totally viable why he was wearing down. Like, this was, it was a really long, drawn-out fight, and, like, by the end of the book, I was kind of tired, too. I was like, but for a while, like, I was like, he's going to do it. He's going to kick this guy's ass. Like, I was really excited. I was rooting for him, and it's like, oh, okay, he's gonna get it. But I was really kind of surprised for a second. Like, they're going to take down Superboy Prime in the core book, which isn't the main book, which, of course, they didn't. But it was just a fun ride. It was a fun ride getting to that point, and I enjoyed getting to know both the characters a little bit better, and it's nice to see Superboy Prime getting ass-kicking, but like I said, it just kind of made me feel like that episode of Heroes, too, where you just have these two powerhouses just going at it. And, you know, sometimes comics don't always have to be really, you know, deep or you know, have a lot of emotional ties or anything like that. Sometimes it's just fun to see two characters knock the crap out of each other, so, and that's, right. You know, it was fun, so... I enjoyed it.
As a fill-in issue, it was pretty... I mean, it's pretty cool just to have a big fight.
And that's really all they could do. Like, they...
Right, because you can't... You know, the story's already been written, so you can't really add on more. You know, I've been on the fence when we talked about Yada's new Ion, and I think I finally have come to the conclusion that I really don't like it. I think he should be Green Lantern. I think he's an interesting character, but I don't think he should be Ion, which we kind of talked about. I think the whole quasi-Kryptonian thing, I don't think that needs to go into play at all. Because now it seems like that basically that if there's this whole planet of people which is still around, if they got to Earth, there would be a whole bunch of Supermen, right?
Right. But the thing is, like, if he's Ion, like, he still wears a ring, though. He has Kyle Rayner's symbol on his chest, like that type of Green Lantern symbol. But he still wears a ring, which is why I don't get, like, if he's Ion, does he just, like, have a more powerful ring? But I'm starting to think the reason why they hinted towards him being a little bit Kryptonian is just so this fight wouldn't be so one-sided.
Right, so he could go up against Superboy Prime,
right.
Or Superman Prime, which I think that's understandable, but it's kind of like you said a couple episodes back, is that, like, the Kryptonian thing is getting out of hand, you know? Like... The last thing we need is more Kryptonians around, you know what I mean?
Right. I agree exactly.
So, yeah, it was a cool fight. It seems like he's vulnerable to lead instead of kryptonite, because while Superman usually can't see through kryptonite actually hurts Yacht, which was interesting.
Well, yeah, I think it only hurt him because he got a pole shoved through his abdomen.
Right, but I think that it was something about the fact that lead weakens him, because you saw that Superboy Prime was, like, eating the lead, which I thought was a little bit much.
It was much. It's like, ew.
But actually, the best thing I loved about this issue was the cover, because it was by Andy Kubert.
Yeah.
And I love the Kuberts.
It was.
And I hate the fact that they're in DC right now.
It's awesome.
But, yeah, I think the most disappointing thing, which it isn't a big deal, but, like, the Sinestro Corps War has been so great, and the reason why it's been so great is that it's been so... set apart from everything else, and it's been perfect, it's been on time and everything, and then with this little thing, like, you know, stuff happens, things are late, you can't really complain about one issue, you know, but it was disappointing, because, like, there's only one issue left, so they were so close to, like, getting it perfect, and then all of a sudden, you know, things fell off the track, which is fine.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll still get our resolution soon, but it's a bummer, because they blew it like they blew Kyle Rayner in Countdown. They blew Superman Prime and what happens to him at the end of the war in Countdown. Like, it should be over by now.
Right. No, yeah, I agree.
So.
Well, Sensational Spider-Man number 41 came out. You didn't pick this up?
I'm
done with the One More Day?
I'm done with One More Day. It's going to take a lot for me to get back on a regular Spider-Man book again. Like, Back in Black just burned me. I was so mad by the end of that.
You're still mad, sounds like.
I am. That was my last issue of Spider-Man right there. I was just like, nope. Mm-mm.
Okay. Now, I can say that as a standalone issue, this was pretty good. And in terms of the One More Day issues, this was the best. Which isn't saying much, because nothing really happened in the first two issues. This is going off of the fact that the last issue... I can't remember because it was late, but like Peter does something with Doctor Strange and used one of his objects that he wasn't supposed to use, and so in this new issue 41, Peter finds himself basically in a dream the whole time, and he starts seeing different versions of himself in the future. So he sees a version of himself if he wouldn't have gotten bit by the spider, and in one of the versions he's this fat, overweight nerd who just plays video games and is obsessed with having control over something, and the fact that he can't have control over his own life, so he tries to have control of these virtual worlds. And then in the other reality, he is this big-time billionaire, and what led to that drive is the fact that people treated him bad in high school. And so it was actually really cool, because when he's meeting these people, he's going through it like all he's focused on is saving Aunt May. And he's missing the point of what these people are trying to tell him, because they're basically trying to say, like, you have it really good. Like, you are a hero. You get to do these extraordinary things. And he's just not listening, because he's totally focused on just his aunt. And he actually meets a little redheaded girl, and you don't know who that is, but it's alluding to the fact that she could have been his daughter. And she basically just straight up says, you're an idiot. Like, you're very selfish. You only focus on the things that you want, and you don't realize, you know, that everything else is out there. And even to this, he's still not listening. And so this is all really great. Like, I'm like, it's, you know, it's very weird, it's very, like, abstract and out of the norm for a Spider-Man book, but it's very well-written, and I like Quesada's art. And then it really takes a turn for the worst, and you find out that he's in this dream world, and he meets Mephisto, the devil. And, of course, there's a deal, and you would think that the deal would be like, okay, well, if you save Aunt May, you can have my soul. And Mephisto's like, no, I don't want your soul. He's like, I want something else. I want something more. I want your marriage. And I was at this point, I honestly, like, rolled my eyes. And I honestly, like, I had to put the book down for a second. Because I was just like, you can't be serious. Like, I understand where this is going. We all understand where this is going. But Mephisto goes into this speech about how... He goes into a retcon speech. It's what he does. He says, here's what's going to happen. I will save your aunt, and you will not be with your wife, and you won't remember the fact that you were married ever, but there's always going to be this part of you that will truly know, and this part of you that's going to be screaming in agony, and that's what I want. And at this point, it ends with Peter and Mary Jane both hearing these things, and Peter saying, no, we're not going to do it, but then Mary Jane saying, well, wait a minute, maybe we should do it. And it finally kicks in at the end where Mephisto's like, you know, you have one more day to decide. You know, is it going to be your aunt or your marriage?
It just seems, it seems so forced. And it's like, okay, you know, we've been, for how long now, we've seen Aunt May lying in a hospital bed. She's been old since the 60s. You know what? Old people die.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's sad for Peter, but he should go through that grieving process and just get over it. Like,
that's the big thing. Like, obviously we know one or two things are going to happen. Aunt May is going to die, or Peter and Mary Jane are no longer going to be married. And at this point, everything is looking more towards the side that Peter and Mary Jane aren't going to be married, because Marvel has talked and Quesada has talked about a lot of the fact that they didn't like the fact that they can marry Peter, and that it really limits the stories. And I just really don't believe that. You know, I can say that, like, yeah, you can make it harder. I understand that, like, if you marry a character off, there's definitely a lot of stories that you drop, but, like, I feel like that was a natural progression of the character. You know, we have Ultimate Spider-Man. We have Peter Parker when he's single. You know, Aunt May, you know, maybe that character has kind of run its course.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, and that's okay. So, like, looking at this book, like, you know, I'm a huge Spider-Man fan. If they killed Aunt May, I wouldn't have any problem with it at all at this point. Well, but...
Yeah,
if their marriage ends, I'm going to be pretty upset. And I'm pretty sure that's what's going to happen.
Just from an opportunity point of view, like, looking at the writers, like, they're saying, oh, you know, it was such a shame that we married him off because it limits the story. I think you could get, like, first of all, I think you can get more stories out of them being married than you could out of Aunt May continuing to be alive. Like, what yeah. more stories are going to revolve around Aunt May? Secondly, I think by having Aunt May pass away, I think you have a wealth of stories with that. Like, I think that opens... That's new territory that hasn't been explored before.
I think you're right. I think I never get tired of Peter thinking about Ben, because it's always reminding him of why he's Spider-Man and the job that he's doing. But I am getting very sick and tired of him worrying about May. It happens all the time. It's very, very constant. And, like, I'm sick and tired of that, although, you know, I'm never sick and tired of his marriage to Mary Jane, because that's real, you know? You're always gonna have... I mean, it's kind of like the same thing that you're saying. Like, I don't think, like, having a superhero be married is not a lack of story.
No.
You know, that's so much more drama to it.
Yeah, I agree. It just seems lazy on the part of Quesada.
So, I don't know. I mean, maybe they're gonna kill May. It really doesn't seem like that's going to be the case, though. And I think that that's a shame. I really liked the beginning of the story, because it seemed like all these different variations of himself and then what could have been his daughter, they're basically saying, like, you're being an idiot. Like, don't do this. Let it go. You know? Like, they're basically saying, like, you're whining. She's going to die. It has to happen. Just, you know, you can't play God. Just deal with it and let it go.
Exactly.
And so that's... And at the same point, that's kind of frustrating, though, because it's true, and I think that's what a lot of fans are saying, and maybe that's why they're writing it, you know, they're trying to get the both perspectives in there, but, like, that's exactly how I feel. It's just, like, it's gonna happen, you know, get over it.
It'd be great if they just did a complete 180, like, from what everyone's thinking, and, like, the next issue, May dies and they stay married.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be great, but, and I don't know, maybe that's what's gonna happen. Maybe all these talks for all the stuff about how they shouldn't be married, maybe that's throwing us off the scent, but I just have this bad feeling.
Yeah. Alright, well, on with the events. Batman number 671 continues the resurrection of Ra's al Ghul.
Bought this.
Grant Morrison. Okay, some of the quick highlights of this book. We get to meet Ra's al Ghul's father, and there's a lot of this book is spent kind of doing... It's very action-heavy, but what character development there is seems to be putting Batman into these weird kind of family situations now, where he has the mother of his son and weird in-laws and stuff like that, and it's very high concept, it's very Morrison-esque, like we've been saying. It just seems like it's just too... It's an okay story, it's not a horrible story, but there's just a little bit of cheesiness added in that isn't to my liking. And, like, where events like Nightfall and No Man's Land and Hush, all those events kind of took place in Gotham. They revolved around the villains and like kind of a more believable a Batman atmosphere. And I know Morrison was going to do like a more 70s high concept Batman where he's a world traveler and it's more than just him in Gotham City. And I guess I'm just not like as much of a fan of that type of Batman as I am the 80s and 90s Batman, where he's, you know, grim and gritty and, like, he's in the city. Like, I want my Batman perched on skyscrapers with gargoyles and, you know, watching the streets down below. I don't need my Batman doing sword fights in the Sahara. And, I mean, that's just what we get. I'm just not into this one so much.
Yeah, I mean, I picked up this issue. I'd heard about, you know, the other two chapters from you. And I thought the art was pretty good. It was a little bit...
I like Tony Daniel's art. I think
his art is good. It's kind of like the Kuberts and Jim Lee, like you said. It's very action-based. I thought it was a little bit rough at points. But I just kind of felt overwhelmed by this issue, because it was just like, there's a lot of action. And it just seemed like there wasn't really a lot of things that were happening, and if things were happening, like I don't know these characters a lot, but it turns out that the sensei was Ra's father, and I'm like, and like I got the sense that that was like a big deal, but then it just turned like it wasn't treated like it was a big deal. It just like flows into something else, and I was like, well, maybe we're already supposed to know that. And then Batman has a fight with the sensei. He ends up in the fountain. It was just kind of like, bam, bam. Okay, we're done with this chapter. We're moving on to something else. And I was like, okay.
And that's going to... That's how the whole series has been so far, is it's very action-heavy and not very... For something where a character's coming back to life, you think there'd be some... And especially with Batman's son, who we still don't really know that well, there just hasn't been any character development. All the characters.
Right, I mean, especially with the. Because I was really. I mean, you talked about how he had to make a choice. Ra's was going to either pick Tim or Damian. And while it was kind of Ghostbusters 2-esque, you know, like, I was like, okay, that's an interesting concept. And so that's why I picked up this issue. And then Bruce is like, wait, we can just go to the Fountain of Life. And I'm like, really?
And
that kind of sucks.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that you have Batman, sitting there saying, it's okay, Ra's, I'll take you to the Fountain of Life. I don't know, that's just poor writing to me. Like, I don't need concepts like the Fountain of Life. Like, this, it's just not, this book isn't urban anymore. It's trying too
mystical.
High concept, and it's just reaching for too much. I know a lot of people out there like it. I don't. I'm ready for this to be over. I could be done with Morrison on the book. I'd be more than happy if he left. I'm just done.
And so now Ra's al Ghul, he can transfer the essence of his body to someone just by touching him? Is that what happened to the monk?
I don't know what happened with that. That was kind of weird, and that threw me off. So I have no idea. Ra's al Ghul shouldn't have any powers, so...
Yeah, because he's dying or whatever, and then a monk touches him, and like there's a scene with the monk walking away, and then apparently he has that body now.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm ready for it to be over.
All right, well, we can talk about a better event, a little event known as Messiah Complex.
This was almost the book of the week for me. This was, it was really, really good.
Oh man, this is making me so happy. Go ahead, tell what you thought.
I missed the last issue because it was sold out. It was still sold out at my store. I still couldn't get an issue. But,
Really?
Yeah, I thought the artwork in this was great. I think this is going to be an incredibly good trade paperback. Like, I'm so ready for, like, the prestige hardcover of this story. But I enjoyed kind of seeing Sinister and the team of X-Men attacking him. I thought there was supposed to be an X-Man death, and I didn't see one in this book, but I thought it was interesting. The Sentinels have always kind of scared me a little bit.
Yeah.
Like these ideas of big walking robot machines, and in this one it looks like the robot programming is overriding the human pilots of the Sentinels. Did I get that right?
Yeah, doing that, because ever since M-Day, the Sentinels are watching over the school now, and something happened where I can't tell what it was. It's basically something gets on one of the pilots and starts wrapping itself all over it, and then takes control of the Sentinel and attacks the school.
Yeah.
But I can't tell what it was.
Yeah, I don't know. But there were just, like, a lot of moments in this book that I like Angel confronting Sinister. He's like, you know, people don't, you know, give us a child or people are going to die. And he's like, people are going to die regardless.
Right.
Like, there was good little moments. And also, what was it? Wolverine fighting Gambit, I enjoyed very much. There were a few shocking moments, like Logan kind of getting depowered, and it looked like he got pretty rough.
He was almost killed.
Nightcrawler getting shot. Like,
Nightcrawler got shot.
There was a bunch where people were just getting taken down by the end of this book. It was a pretty vicious fight. But at the end, we see where the child ended up, and Cable has her.
Cable has him!
And that was great.
Yeah, because the whole time, it's like I said it a couple episodes ago, like, all the sources are pointing that Sinister has this baby, but they haven't confirmed that, and so I thought that might be a red herring. And in this issue, when Wolverine's talking to Gambit, Logan finds out that apparently an X-Men has a baby, and the whole time I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. And then Scott gets this information, and Scott's like, well, that doesn't make sense either, because if an X-Men had the baby, he would let us know. And then at the very end, you see someone running with the baby, and then you see that it is Cable, which makes sense, because while Cable apparently died, you know, in my carriage run, Gambit was the one who was supposed to have killed him. So, obviously, something else happened there.
I'm wondering if Gambit... Is Gambit really a bad guy? Because if you look at the cover, and it shows, like, the downed X-Men on the cover, you know, you have Rogue, you have the Scarlet... Or the White Queen. Yeah, Gambit's one of them, and so it was kind of
ever since Gambit he was under control of Apocalypse for a while, and then he was off the team, and then he joined up with the Marauders, which he's done before. He was with the Marauders before he was an X-Men. So it's, you know, he can go either way, but at this point it looks like there's something else going on. But yeah, dude, this story is just getting better and better.
It's a great event. I'm really kind of jealous that Marvel's doing such a good job with it.
I just hope that it keeps up, you know? Like, it's... And I love that it really is bringing everything together. Like, you had a nice scene with the new X-Men in here, and, like, them getting just slaughtered by Lady Deathstrike and the Reaver. And it just, like I've said before, like, it's the whole X-Men family coming together. We had another shot of Layla Miller and Madrox in the alternate reality. And something's going on with a mutant there, and that one mutant set something off, some event, and so now all mutants are imprisoned, and they're trying to track that down. So yeah, when I saw the last page and it was Cable is back, I was happy. I was very happy. So
I got this. I found some old comics this week, and one of them was X-Men Special Collector's Edition Volume 1, Number 1 from 1991, and it's all like that classic Jim Lee lineup of X-Men.
Oh, the Jim Lee, is it the one with the wraparound cover?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it is. It's got
I love that one.
It's got the galleries inside. Like, it's so utterly 90s. I was looking through it, and it's just so utterly 90s. It's
fantastic. I love that.
It's got like 5 galleries. It's got sketches. It's got an obligatory like shot of all the X-Men by the pool in their swimsuits. It's just.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's where it gets a little bit out of hand. But I love that that story, because that was one of the great like Magneto's coming back stories, and I still think like there's a lot of people that Jim Lee draws better than everyone else, and I love his Magneto. I think his Magneto is like the Magneto.
Yeah, I found it in a stack, and I was kind of flipping through it, and I was like, oh, this is just like a time capsule. It's just wonderful.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, this week's countdown highlights. I'll give you a quick rundown.
Oh, yeah.
So, the first part of the story is Mary Marvel. Mary Marvel found out how to turn the tables on Eclipso and imprisons her. On a side note, pencils by Carlos Magno. Carlos Magno likes to draw on Mary Marvel's ass, because it is all over the first 2-3 pages of this book.
Nice.
Like, it's just like, it jumps out at you. Like, the first page, you're like, you open the cover, and it's like, whoa, there it is. So, the next couple pages get Jimmy Olsen on Apocalypse. Surprisingly not horribly written. Jimmy's in trouble. He's a slave on Apocalypse. Mr. Miracle is there up to something. And gets to rescue Jimmy, and they have a little moment aside where they talk about Barda, and you really see some pain in Mr. Miracle's voice. And out of all the new gods, Barda and Mr. Miracle are probably the only two that I really liked.
Is Barda dead?
Yeah, she's gone. And
when
so
did she die?
She died in the first Death of the New Gods issue.
Oh, okay.
But it was kind of nice. Like, you get some moments where he's talking about it, and he really gets this feeling like he's in pain. Like, he's lost his wife, and he's up to something. I don't know what. Kind of got excited about it. So.
Okay, all right.
Fourth part, Mr. Mixelplick, after his torture by Superman Prime, he returns to the fifth dimension really quickly. He's in bad shape, and this, I guess, his mistress or whatever, she's, you know, what happened to you? What happened to you? He's like, and all he's saying is, seal it up, seal off the dimension, seal it off, don't let him get through. And then he's like, he's there, this is the end, he's here. And all of a sudden, the world just goes to white, much like it did in the first Crisis or in Zero Hour. So one can only expect that the fifth dimension is gone.
That's too bad.
Things are being erased. There's already plenty of the multiple Earths are being killed off already. Now the other dimensions are gone. So I think we're pulling in. We're pulling in now. Okay.
I'm getting a weird sense of deja vu. I have to be honest with you.
I know, it's ridiculous, isn't it? Last part of the book, Piper and Trickster still on the run. They've been on the run from the Suicide Squad for quite some time. We've seen that Deadshot is very pissed off that he hasn't killed these people yet. So he's kind of off the map, and he's tracking these guys on his own because he just wants to finish the job. After a brief little firefight between the two of them, he actually shoots Trickster twice, one in the chest and one in the head. Trickster is dead. And so, one of them's gone. Pied Piper's going to be... He's still lassoed to the body, so I don't know how they're going to work that out, but Trickster's dead. I don't see him coming back from that one.
Right.
So that is the weekend countdown.
Well, sounds like you're enjoying it a little bit more.
Think, Yeah, I mean, like I said the other week, like, things are just kind of picking up now, and, like, they're moving quicker. I'm still not, like, necessarily happy. Like, the Mary Marvel thing, I could care less about. A lot of stories aren't being resolved. Nothing's really being resolved. But I feel like the Death of the New Gods storyline probably should have been one of these storylines in Countdown, not a miniseries, because it started, and then it branched out, and now it seems to be coming back in the fold. And
I'm wondering if these stories are going to be resolved in Countdown, though. I'm wondering if they're going to be resolved in Final Crisis. That wouldn't be good.
No, I'm guessing that's what's going to happen, too. So, I'm still holding on.
Right. Well, I heard that a lovely book came out this week known as All-Star Batman and Robin, Eric, so...
Still reading this one, too.
Is there any chance that you're still picking that up?
Oh, hell yeah. Like, usually I like this book, and this is so far away from Batman that it's unrecognizable almost, but it's... I mean, you almost gotta look at it just like an Elseworlds. Like, it's not continuity, mm-hmm. So all the characters are gonna be different. And usually I like it. This one, however, just, it flew the coop. It was just so far out of, you know, left field that I couldn't handle it. I was like, this was just plain bad.
What happened?
Well, first of all, the first part of the story actually wasn't bad. The first part opens up to our introduction of All-Star Joker, which is just creepy as all hell. Like, he doesn't smile hardly at all. Actually, I don't think he smiles throughout the entire scene that he's in at all. He's this creepy clown guy, and what you see is this, he's looking out the window as the rain is coming down on Gotham, and this woman he's just had a one night stand with is waking up, like, and she has no idea who he is. Like, it's like the psychotic clown. And even like, this is, they, another thing that pissed me off was they make a mention to the last panel of Batman Year One, which is in continuity still.
Oh no.
And he's like, well, were you the person who tried to poison the water supply? And he's like, yeah, that was a couple years ago, that was when I was just beginning. And I was like, don't try and tie this to Year One. Year One's continuity, this is not the same Batman as that. That irritated me. But also, like, this woman is just like, she just had a one-night stand, she's just like, eh. But again, Jim Lee gets to draw half-naked women, so. But it's
kind of a given.
It's just really creepy. Like, the Joker talks about, like, she talks about how this Joker was sweet-talking her, and he is kind of sweet-talking her and seducing her. And it's really kind of eerie, and then, he's talking about how he loves certain things in his own special way, and then he just starts pummeling her and, like, beating the crap out of her, and then he takes, what does he take? He takes something, like a tie or like a necktie, and he strangles her, and you just see, like, his face as he's doing it, and it's, like, contorting, and you see her, like, her hands are clawing at his face, and it's uncomfortable. And then finally, like, her eyes roll back in her head, she falls down, and he's like, and I love you in my own special way. And then he puts on his purple suit, walks out of the room, still not smiling, and we get the half-naked Nazi chick who was in The Dark Knight Returns is obviously one of his henchmen, so...
So they're tying in The Dark Knight Returns and Year One?
He's trying to, like, it makes it feel like he's trying to, and I think he said before, like, this is supposed to be the, like, the lead into Dark Knight Returns. It's not, like... This is so far out of... Even Dark Knight Returns, like, that was dark. This is much more like how he wrote Batman in Dark Knight Strikes Again, because that Batman was psychotic. But, no. Like, all of these you have to almost look at as separately, because they're all written... They're all written absolutely differently. Right. So, no, this is not in the same continuity. But, then we get back to the Batcave. Dick Grayson wants to help out. At first, Batman's kind of saying how he's annoyed with Dick Grayson. And then he's kind of like, well, you know, I gave him the chance, and he's actually pretty good. He's a born detective, and he's kind of proud. And then he turns around again and treats him like, you know, he treats him awful. Like, he just, like, I can't even describe it. I can't even describe it. But basically, he's like, I'm not even going to let you help me until you get a mask. You need a mask. You need a costume. And it was just kind of, it's not Batman. Like, why the hell would he put, there's no reason for him to put this child in harm's way. Like, he's gotten information out of the child, but the only funny part about that situation was he's like, Dick Grayson's like, okay, finally. And at the end of it, he's like, okay, well, what's with this giant T-Rex? It's kind of, you know, kind of weird. And he's like, shut up. So, I mean, he's...
So what issue is this?
This is issue 8.
I'm not even... And what is the title of the book again?
All-Star Batman and Robin.
All-Star Batman and Robin.
Oh, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. We get a little tease. So, we've been treated to a little bit of the ultimate or the Ultimate, the All-Star Justice League. And so in this one, Hal Jordan pays a visit to Gotham City, and he wants to talk to Batman about what's been going on with this kid and everything. And all Batman can do is just like, oh, this guy's an idiot, I have to go talk to him, he's an idiot, he's got the most, you know, powerful weapon in the universe, he's an idiot. Like, that moron, oh, what a bother, you know, let's just piss off. And so he goes to meet him, and he's like, I can't talk to you, meet me here. And it's like, you were just there, if you have anything to say to him, just say it. Like, oh, I was pissed off. It's like, all we got was like, how many pages of him just calling Hal Jordan an idiot just to call Hal Jordan an idiot? Like,
that's where I drew the line. What do they keep on calling? I don't know. It was the one where it was All-Star Wonder Woman, and she was calling all the men something.
Yeah, like, it's just, this is Frank Miller pissing all over the DC universe.
And it's just like, it's so repetitive. Like, he says the same things over and over again. I can't remember exactly what the Wonder Woman was saying, but she just kept on saying it over and over again.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think this is the first issue that the goddamn Batman is not mentioned.
Oh, that's too bad.
But, I mean, we had a streak going, it was kind of nice. It was really cool to see Jim Lee draw Hal Jordan, because he looks awesome. But, there's nothing...
I'm not sure. Has Jim Lee ever drawn Hal Jordan? I'm sure he has, but not to my recollection.
Not that I can remember, but this is like a really young Hal Jordan in the beginning of his career. Awesome. Like, I want Jim Lee to do a Green Lantern book. Actually, Jim Lee has drawn, because he used to do covers once in a while for Green Lantern on...
I know he did... Was it... Because I know that he's done Kyle. But I don't know if he's done Hal.
Well, he did a cover, it was like Green Lantern 50 or something like that, on Judd Winnick's run, where he had a cover with all the Green Lanterns and it had Hal on it as a Green Lantern.
Okay.
That's the only one I can think of. So after that, we get Dick Grayson getting some inspiration to become he was inspired by a painting of Robin Hood in the Manor. So he's going to be like, he creates a costume for himself that's very kind of Robin-esque, but it's Robin Hood. And he's like, but it's not quite the Robin costume. It doesn't have the short pants, and it's got a hood. And he's like, you're going to call me the Hood. That's going to be my name. This is my costume. I'm the Hood. And he's got, like, a bow and arrow. And Batman's like, that's stupid. You know what the first one's going to do to you? And he comes up, and he pulls the hood down over Dick's face. He's like, that's what they're going to do to you. He's like, you're Robin. Case closed. And it's like, all right. And then, God, it's not
even... more.
There's more. All-Star Catwoman shows up.
Why are they? They're throwing so many people in this. Was there anything else with All Star Black Canary, or is she gone?
No, she's gone. She got her piece. Batman had sex with her, and now she's gone. And so this is Catwoman back as like a pure villain again, and apparently Joker knows her by her first name, because they're very cordial to each other. Like they're like work associates, and Joker's like, I got some business, you want in on it? And she's like, yeah, maybe, all right. So I mean, it's just like, it's almost odd and jarring, because we saw like Jim Lee draw Catwoman in Hush, and it was a completely different Catwoman, and now it's like you see her the same again, but it's a completely different version of her. And yeah, and so it leaves off with Bruce saying, lose the hood, you're Robin. So we're gonna get Robin in the next issue finally, but there's still no like really clear direction on, like, apparently Joker was involved with Dick Grayson's parents' murder, but we still don't know how. There's very little plot development at all. The whole part with Hal Jordan was completely unnecessary.
I don't know. I understand that you're a purist and you love Batman. I have absolutely no idea why you're reading this book. You shouldn't be reading it. No one should be reading this. This is like the trash of the comic book world.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, it's got prestige format covers and everything like that. The thing I don't get is, like, usually I can take this book and laugh at it, because it's just so far out there. This one was just horrible, because this one, you get the sense that Frank Miller just hates DC Comics. Like, there is not one bit of love for any of these characters in any ounce of this book at all. I mean, and I don't understand why DC would let him publish this. Like, it almost is like, well, does he like Batman? Because he makes Batman the most unbelievable asshole. Like, I don't like Batman after reading this book. You know, Dick Grayson is whiny, Catwoman, Joker, you know, they're all these characters that, you know, there's things about them that you like, and I understand doing them differently, but that wasn't the point of the All-Star line. You know, you can do them differently, but do them true to their roots without the burden of continuity. That was the original premise. But this is just like, let's turn everybody into this image where no one will like them or relate to them in any way. And that's, like, I'm losing the fun of reading this. Like, this was, I felt gross after reading this for some reason. Like,
I think, you know, I've definitely have been vocal about why I don't like the All-Star line. But I think if you look at it, there's only two titles. They're written by Frank Miller and Grant Morrison. And I don't think that there was a plan at all for the line. I think you had two extremely high-profile writers who I think are, you know, overrated. And I feel like DC just said, here, do whatever you want.
They did.
Like,
they...
Because we have things that are, like, they're creating their own continuity, but it's absolutely supposed to be out of continuity. And then, but it's crossing over, too, because All-Star Superman has been an All-Star Batman, and it makes no sense.
Yeah, no, it's awful, and I just don't understand why DC would let people get away with it. I think Dan DiDio should be fired, personally, for the direction that he's taken DC Comics in, because they're just a mess. And the one good thing about the Batman line was Detective Comics with Paul Dini, but Dini got sucked into the Countdown thing, and we got such a, like, mass of fill-in writers, and then his own Detective Comics was, like, starting to try and tie into Countdown, which we didn't need. It was good, and then we just lost it. And the rest of it, like, you're right, there's no direction for these books, which is, like, a top-tier flagship character. Countdown is a mess, books are late, like, Dan DiDio, you're screwing up this company. Flat out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like where DC is right now.
Neither do I, and it kills me to say that. It really does.
Yikes.
So, yeah, I mean, like I said, and here I am. I started with the good book, and then I got into all the books that I hated, so I'm, like, in the negative place again. But, like, this is how I felt after my books. I was just like, wow, do I need to just, like, start buying indie comics or just drop DC entirely? And, like, I was like, wow. Like, if books were this bad all the time, I'd stop reading comics.
Things are good over at Marvel, by the way, just to let you know. We have Messiah Complex, the Ultimate Universe, and it's going very well for us.
You have Messiah Complex, that's about it.
So if you'd like to come over anytime, Eric, we will welcome you with open arms.
You know, the thing is, I'm excited about Messiah Complex, I'm excited about the Initiative, I'm excited about Ultimate Spider-Man. Like, the only thing that I like about DC right now is the Sinestro War, and that's almost over. And then I'm like...
I feel the same way. I mean, like, we're not going to talk about it, but Titans came out this week, and Titans was disappointing.
The one book that, like, I really love Robin. Robin has been really consistently good for a while,
right?
And then it got pulled into this Ra's al Ghul business, and it's awful. Like, I'm so ready for that book to just go back to itself, because there are little pockets of DC that I do still like. I really like Justice Society.
Justice Society is still good. I mean, but that's getting swept up in everything too, with Kingdom Come Superman being back.
Yeah, no, I'm such a fan of just the smaller stories right now, and, you know, events are fine, but God, we've been handling this for, like, since, like, 2000. What? When did Identity Crisis come out? Because that really seems like
Crisis came out, like,
2003? Because it seems like
about 4 years.
Ever since then, it seems like that was the start of a whole new era of wave after wave after wave of events.
That's true.
And I loved them at first. Like, I love Identity Crisis. I still go back and read that, like, once a year. Infinite Crisis, I enjoyed. But everything after that is, like, everything after that is a more pale reflection of the former. And I'm just so tired. I'm so tired.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm not looking forward to Final Crisis, but I think Final Crisis needs to be a very big deal to DC. Not only the actual story, but I think post-Final Crisis is going to be crucial to the DC Universe. Because, I mean, the biggest thing is that they dropped the ball post-Infinite Crisis with the 1 year later. And then they've been trying to pick the pieces from that ever since.
Yeah.
So they need to kind of just, like, put out some books, no more big events for a while, and just, you know, keep things within the book.
I don't think they dropped the ball. Like, I enjoyed 1 year later. I thought that was a great...
Oh, no.
I thought that was
one year later was horrible.
No, it wasn't.
Horrible.
Like, that was a great way for new readers to come in, because they kind of reintroduced a lot of characters. The Justice Society got a fresh start. That's where I started reading them again.
The only good thing that came out of 1 year later was the Justice Society. All the other books were horrible.
No,
horrible.
Batman books were great, initially. The face-to-face
stuff. Yeah, I mean, the two-face stuff, but, like,
But
I mean, I was jaded with the whole, like, not giving us the 1 year, you know?
Well, that's what happened in 52. That was the missing year.
But But there wasn't a missing year, because, and we've talked about that, because 52 became something else, which is fine, because World War III was a missing year, you know?
Supposed to be, yeah, then that was awful, yeah, but 52 did evolve. I enjoyed 52.
I thought 52, I mean, 52 was the best thing DC has done within, I mean...
Recently, probably the last good thing that they did.
Yeah, definitely. Special Core War is great, but yeah.
Out of finished events, yeah, that was the last finished event. So, yeah, I mean...
And it's just like, 52 wasn't... I mean, 52 was an event, but 52 was self-contained. I mean, and that's, like, what we want to see. I mean, the Sinestro Corps War is not branching over to all these books. It's basically Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah.
So that's what we need. I mean, it's cool that this Batman storyline is going. I mean, it's unfortunate that it's not a better storyline, but...
A lot of people really like it, though. I mean, you and I both have major problems with Grant Morrison, but he has a following out there. Like, people love X-Men stuff, too.
I know.
I'm not saying you did.
That is blasphemy. We did not talk about that in this podcast.
But there's other people out there who did. And, like, it just makes me worried, because I know DC's sales are slipping, and if this is, like, going to be the future of the industry, I really wonder, like, what's going to happen. So, I don't know.
We'll see.
Okay, so some big news in movie news today. Earlier today, we posted on our website at www.fanboysstrikeback.com the teaser poster for The Dark Knight, which very much lets you know that the Joker is back in force.
Yeah.
And it's
not very subtle.
No, and it's awesome. It's
it's really, really well done.
It's great without showing anything, and that's what I love about teaser posters.
I mean, and kind of like what I said when I posted it, it does not look like any poster, movie poster that you've ever seen.
No, it does.
Like, it really does. It's extremely unique. It really gets the point across. It lets you know that the Joker is back. And, like, when I saw it, like, I just immediately got very, very excited to see the movie.
Yeah, it's going to be good. So also, semi-Batman related, Batman himself, Christian Bale, has signed on to star as John Connor in the next Terminator movie, which will be the fourth in the series. I thought this was really interesting because it seems like they're kind of rewriting Part 3 with the Terminator.
Which is good because Part 3 was horrible.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've got the Terminator TV show, which is basically acting like Terminator 3 never happened, and it's going to continue the story of the characters after T2. Mm-hmm. But what also is really cool is if you go back to T2, there were flash forwards, I guess, to when John was older, and he was kind of this grizzled, like, army military guy. Christian Bale looks kind of like that guy. Like, I can totally see Christian Bale in this, like, futuristic setting, like, taking on the machines.
I was surprised because Christian Bale usually doesn't do too many, you know, high-performance movies. Usually he does something like Batman, and then he goes to another movie.
Well, yeah.
So I was surprised that he was signing on to do this after The Dark Knight, but... I think he'll be an amazing John Connor.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm excited. I'm a fan of the Terminator series. I always have been. I didn't like the third one, but the first two are great. And I'm excited about the TV show. I think it's a really viable story, and this is supposed to be a springboard into another series of movies. We're getting away from the, you know, going into the past and trying to save, Sarah and John. This is going to be now... And maybe they aren't rewriting 3, because at the end of 3 is when the war actually... Or when Judgment Day happens. And so now this... series of movies, you know, possible
talks
series
about the actual war.
Yeah, it's all going to be the war with the machines.
Yeah, because I hated Terminator 3. Like, I hated it, and I didn't think that there would be anything that would make me want to see a Terminator 4. But I found out that Christian Bale's going to be in it. I'm like, all right, I'll see it. I'll be there.
Yeah, it's like Jurassic Park. Every time they make a sequel, I get excited. It's just
I've given up with Jurassic Park now.
So, finally, the last episode of Heroes Season 2 was out last night, Powerless.
Powerless. Oh, gosh.
And this was our makeshift season finale, and there were some surprises.
This was some action. Like, people have been complaining that there hasn't been a lot of action in Heroes. This episode had so much action in it.
Yeah, first of all, this season... I think I enjoyed more than most, and it definitely did have its problems at the beginning, but it started off slow, but it seemed like the writers got it. Like, they took the feedback from the audience that they were seeing online and such, And it's great the writers looked at that and they said, okay, we need to do something about that. And they fixed it. Like, that's such a great thing of seeing writers respond to the audience and the audience having a say in the overall product. That was fantastic. And the second half of the season was absolutely fantastic. It was like season one again.
Yeah, like Tim Kring, the creator, he got online and he actually apologized to fans. And he said, you know, there's probably too much romance in the show. Maybe we shouldn't do romance. And we realized that you guys wanted something really big to happen in the beginning of the season after the bomb last season. And we probably started off a little bit slower. And it was just like, it was such a surreal thing to be like, are you serious? You know, this big Hollywood producer, creator is actually, like, dedicated to their fans.
Yeah.
And it's I mean, that's what the great thing about The Heroes is. Like, I mean, it's a show that is extremely dedicated to its fans. So, I agree with you 100%. Like, you know, there were some issues early on, but, man, I mean, it got so good.
Yeah, it was fantastic. So, this episode wrapped up a lot of storylines. Really quickly, there were a couple deaths. What we got left with was Micah and Nikki running off to save Micah's cousin. Nikki runs in powerless, saves the cousin, but she did not make it out.
We didn't see a body, though.
We didn't see a body, that's true. She could show up. However, we were promised the death. She looked like one of them. Her character wasn't always the most well-loved character, so I could easily see her as being gone now. Mm-hmm. And also,
and she went out like a champ if she did go.
She did. They really redeemed her character, which was nice to see. Another part of the story was Claire's possible takedown of the company, where she was going to go public with her powers, and that would make the, you know, and expose the company that way. Mm-hmm. The way to work around that, the company let HRG go to go back to his family on the condition, and he said, you know, the family will be safe, we won't ever bother them again, on the condition that you come back and work for the company. And so Noah Bennett makes the deal with the devil to keep his family safe. And that was so hard to watch, too, because, like, from, like, halfway through season one, Noah came onto the side of the angels. He kind of started off a villain, and he came over. And it was so good, because he's such a great character. And, like you want to have this guy with you in real life, because this guy's got your back. Like, he's a caring father, and, like, he's just a great guy. And it's just, like, you understand the decision he makes. This was much more believable deal with the devil than what we saw in Spider-Man this week.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But this, like, you understand his motivation. You totally understand why and everything like that. So he's back with the company, unfortunately, and that's it. Third part of the story, the confrontation with Adam Monroe.
Yes.
This was
some big things
fantastic.
Happened there.
Okay, so Parkman and Nathan come in to rescue Peter, who is already in confrontation with Hero. So all of a sudden, we already have all these heroes thrown together, kind of at odds with each other. And this whole season, Peter's been off on the fringe, where he was such a force for good in season one. He's lost his memory, he's lost his way in this season. This one, we bring Nathan back to bring Peter back. And that was...
Exactly, which was a classic role reversal of the end of last season. I mean, Nathan basically tells Peter the exact same thing that Peter told him. You know, it was Peter that made Nathan realize, you know, that the things that he was doing was wrong. And we see, which we talked about, because it's been so great to see Nathan finally choose a side, and him actually bringing Peter along with him, and finally making Peter realize that Adam's not a good guy, you're being played, wake up.
Yeah, and then Peter taking care of the virus while Hero takes care of Adam. And how do you beat a guy who can't die? Well, if you're Hero, you stick him in a coffin and bury him alive.
Holy crap.
That was creepy. That was so creepy.
Yeah, you just see this shot. I mean, Hero gets back, and Ando's like, you know, what happened? Did you deal with Kensei? And Hero is just like, you know, he's so sad and so serious, which is a very big departure from the Hero that we know and love. He kind of looks at Ando, and he's like, you know, he's in a place where he will never be able to hurt anyone ever again. And then we cut to this shot of Adam Monroe in a coffin underground, just yelling and pleading for someone to let him out. And it was just so freaky. Ugh, I don't even want to think about it. It's just having to be there for all eternity. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, no, that was brilliant. That was a stroke of brilliant storytelling.
Great. I mean, we really saw a badass hero.
The last part of the story dealing with Mohinder and Siler and Maya and Molly. Siler confronts Mohinder. Mohinder finds out Siler's depowered and automatically like just goes for Siler. And unfortunately, it didn't work out. But it was really kind of cool to see like just that knee jerk reaction where he's like, "I'm gonna take Siler down." Huh. And you know, Siler's secret comes exposed to Maya, so you know Siler doesn't have to play nice anymore. All of a sudden, it's like the Siler character that we know and love, where he's just like this calculating evil bastard. And what happens is Elle, who is trying to redeem herself in her father's eyes, goes to confront Siler. She finds out Mohinder's being held hostage along with Molly. She goes to confront him. They have a brief fight. Siler's injured, but he gets away. And Elle just, she does kind of redeem herself. Like, I was happy to see that she wasn't one of the people who dies in the episode.
Yeah, she's become a very cool new character. Like, I never was a big fan of Veronica Mars, but when I heard that Kristen Bell was joining the show, I've heard very good things about her, so I was pretty excited, and she's done a great job.
Yeah, it's great to see her character evolve from someone who's so one-sided to, you know, she hears things from Noah about her childhood and her parents, and she starts to question what she thinks is right. So, even though she's doing it to make her father proud, like, it's understandable. Like, she's a teenage girl, she wants her father's blessing, so... You know, that was very cool. So Siler slinks away again like he did at the end of last season, injured. More on this later. And finally, the last reveal. We knew two heroes were going to die in this episode. Claire's attempt to stop the company by going public was stopped as soon as her father, her Noah, came back into her life. We got a great reunion between the two of them. However, the idea was not totally dropped with Claire's true father, Nathan, who, after the virus, you know, was destroyed by Peter, they said, you know, this isn't over. We need to end all of this. How do we end it? We take the company public. We let everyone know what we can do. They call a press conference, and Nathan gets up. And it was very cool to see Nathan, you know, at the podium again, because he is the public servant. He's, mm-hmm. you know, he's the senator-elect, and he talks about that, and he talks about the events of last season, all the incredible people that he's met, and what they can do, and the kind of new aspect that he has on life now. And it was a great moment. It was like I was all caught up into it, and all of a sudden, boom, he takes two to the chest, and he goes down. And I was shocked.
Yeah, I wasn't shocked. I knew that there was another person that had to die, and there was like 5 minutes left. And Nathan starts talking about holding a press conference, and it's Nathan, Peter, and Parkman up there. And I was like, you know, I'm watching it with my girlfriend, and I'm just like, no, 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 because Nathan's my favorite character. And as soon as he kind of looks at Peter, and he's leading up to, like Eric said, he's talking about all the people he's met, everything that's happened, and he's trying basically to figure out how to say that he can fly. And he kind of stumbles, and he kind of looks at Peter, and he's like, well, you know, I guess I can just say it. And then, bam, two shots to the chest, chaos is everywhere. People are freaking out, and we see one guy, kind of his little swagger, walk away. And that man, we always saw him from the back, but it looked a lot like Noah Bennett, which just broke my heart.
Yeah.
Which just broke my heart. I was so into this show at this point, it was not even funny. Like, there was so much stuff in this episode that happened, like, I felt like I just ran a marathon. I was tired, and of course, you know, Eric and I did our little Monday ritual where we called each other as soon as the show ended because we had to talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, it was good. I think, as sad as I am to see Nathan go, I think it's really ballsy that the choices they make in this show where they really, like, no one is safe. Everyone walks around with the target on them at all times.
That's true.
And it does. Like, I watched this show because of moments like last night where I should have probably seen Nathan's death coming, but I didn't, and I was just like hit in the gut by it, and that was a great kind of visceral reaction.
But that's just like last episode, you called Nikki's death perfectly, and I did not see that coming at all.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot.
And the worst part about, the very worst part about Nathan dying is that we've talked about how evil Angela Petrelli is. But afterwards, you know, we see her right after he got shot. We see the news covering it, you know, and this is seconds afterwards saying, you know, Senator Petrelli has been shot, and she's watching this, and she's on the phone with someone saying, I know, it's okay, it couldn't be avoided, And, you know, her just saying, I hope that you realize that you've just opened Pandora's box. Because not only are other people who are connected to Nathan going to know about this, but the most powerful hero out there is Peter, is Nathan's brother, who saw this firsthand, was not there. So you combine that with the fact that how much he loves his brother, anything that he would do for his brother, and then the guilt that Peter's going to feel about not being able to stop it. I'm thinking we're going to see a pretty pissed off Peter Petrelli in season 2.1, season whenever we see Heroes again.
Season 3. Or volume 3, I should say. And I think Peter might have his hands full, because as this generation story wrapped up into volume 2, we were treated to a few minutes of the beginning of volume 3, which was titled Villains.
Yep.
And in that one, we see that Siler, during his fight with L, was able to escape with the virus, which is what's been keeping all of his powers at bay. He administers the antidote and pulls the can to him telekinetically, and he's back. He heals, and he's back. And I was, like, I got chills, and I'm like, oh! Like, if there's an awesome badass villain, it is Siler. And yeah. I was excited. I was so... It kills me that I have to wait till September to see the show again.
I know. It sucks. I mean, we really lucked out with the fact that they were going to two volumes this year. So we really lucked out that we got at least some closure, because a lot of shows are just going to straight up stop because of the strike.
Right.
But, oh, this was so bad, because I just want to know everything else that's going to happen.
Yeah, I need more of this show, so... And it's too, well, Origins is happening online, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a big week. There's a lot of up and down in this
yeah,
podcast.
There's some positives, some negatives.
I don't think anything was in between.
I think I was a more positive guy for once. That's amazing.
I know. Yeah, it was a rough week for me. I don't know why. So, well, if you got anything to contribute to this show, or you'd like have any questions for us, or like to tell us how you felt about a lot of these issues, you can email us at contact@fanboystrikeback.com, or you can go to our website www.fanboystrikeback.com, where we post our reviews as well as movie news, comic book news, general media news that we find interesting, and also we have a link to our forums page on there where we have some topics that we post to see what you guys think, and also you can go on there and post topics of your own. It's a good way to talk about things that we don't talk about on here if you're curious to get our opinions on anything. So, we are also on MySpace.
Yes, myspace.com/thefanboystrikeback. You can come there. We always have our Book of the Week blog there, which we also have on our website. You can add us to your friends list, do the whole MySpace thing. And I think that's pretty much it. You can catch us on any podcatcher. So if you have any feedback from us, positive or negative, please leave us a review or send us an email, like Eric said. We'd love to hear what you guys have to say. And yeah, this was a lot of stuff came out this week.
Yeah.
So I hope you feel good, Eric. I hope this was therapeutic for you to air this out and just let it go.
I just want this next week to redeem it. I need some good comics. I'm gonna go read X-Men number one. Go back to the 90s. I'm gonna
go back to a better time.
Hop in my DeLorean and go back to 1991 here and cozy up.
There you go.
So, all right.
All right. Well, I'm David.
I'm Eric.
We'll see you guys next week.